Hey, everybody, it's your host, Daisha. Long time no see. Get it? It's podcast. I've never seen you. Or have I? Anyway, you're about to hear an old episode we did with the Texas Tenors, who are going to be featured on your PBS station very soon, I believe. They're happening tonight here in Houston on August 7th, 2017. They're a very different kind of boy band, and they were so nice and so funny when I talked to them. I think you'll really enjoy the interview. And you know the drill. Make sure to subscribe to, rate us, and review us on iTunes. But before you do, I want you to think about all of the great times we've had together and how much we love you. Okay, enjoy the episode. My name is Daisha Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark
secret.
I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock, and I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical, but I really want to learn. So, every week on this show, a classical music expert will give me a piece of classical music they think I should know, and then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the classical classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Daisha Clay, and here with me today are two of the Texas Tenors, John Hagen and J.C. Fisher. The Texas Tenors are a classical crossover trio, and we're going to talk about what that means in a little while. They, according to their debut album title, they have country roots and classical sound, although I think it's the other way around from reading your bios. They had the only independent album to be number one on both the country and classical charts. They made it to the top four of America's Got Talent in 2009. You Should Dream is their latest album, and it reached number nine on the classical charts and the top 40 pop charts.
I think it's actually been number seven.
Oh, really?
Recently.
Okay.
In the 18th week or so.
We have high expectations for this week, actually.
We think it's going to climb higher.
Climber.
Nice. Yep, because of Classical Classroom.
It's absolutely
going to push you over the edge.
Because we know the listenership here is about 10 million, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. So tell me about your opera backgrounds. This is John, by the way.
John, yes. Yeah. My parents were both teachers, classroom teachers and music teachers. They'd both done both those things. And so I grew up in a musical family and couldn't escape that, which turned out to be a good thing. So was exposed to especially classical music from a young age. I mean, listen to everything like every teenager does.
Sure.
So when I went to college. Well, as a matter of fact, when I first went to college, I was going to major on my trumpet. I got a trumpet scholarship.
Hey, I play trumpet too.
Yeah,
and nice.
But I got a bug for singing and switched. And so I pursued a career in classical singing and got an education degree and taught for a while and did kind of regional opera and some symphony orchestra work around the country and was really doing that for the most part, more or less, when I met JC and Marcus, you know, before we embarked on this new thing. So, but that's kind of my background in classical music.
All right. What about you, JC?
Well, I kind of have the opposite story because I grew up on a farm and my dad loves country music and that's pretty much all I listened to was country. And I liked basketball quite a bit in high school and the kids would come over and sing the Star Spangled Banner. And this is kind of funny because I always thought I could sing, but I never really sang because I didn't want to embarrass myself or anybody else, but I just remember telling the principal next home game, I'm going to go sing the Star Spangled Banner. And I was just the kind of guy where I would just do anything. And I got out there and sang, and my choir director said, hey, you should be in choir. So I really had no formal training of the voice until I was about a junior. And I got real interested in singing and ended up taking voice lessons. In a matter of 6 years, I basically got a degree in voice and put my own solo show together. And that's kind of one of the things that led to us putting a group together and sending a tape into America's Got Talent, like you were saying earlier.
So this genre of classical crossover is really new to me. Can you talk a little bit, John, about what that means?
I guess in my mind, it really started with the three tenors, Pavarotti, Domingo, and Carreras, back in 1990, I think it was 90, when they did their first The Three Tenors concert.
chiara e saffira, pura confina, manca odor il cuore. Ormai non sentosi felice appieno, chi su quel seno non li va amore. La donna è mobile, qual di umano vento, muta da cento ed in pensiero.
Really brought operatic singing to the masses, and they did numbers in there, not only operatic numbers, but some Broadway and popular tunes. And that went so well, they proceeded to do that all around the world, mm-hmm. you know, in big venues. And I know the sales of the DVD were, the VCR tape, was it VCR tape? were phenomenal, and they really did bring the spotlight onto the opera world and classical music. Yeah. And so I think it's really grown so much since then, but I think that was a real important seed. And for us, JC having this idea of putting this group together where we would do a little bit of everything is, the epitome of crossover, because we really cross over from Die Hard country to full on. When we do Ness and Dorma, we don't mm-hmm. we don't sing the tune mm-hmm. to the aria and the. We sing it like it's sung in the opera.
Oh
house.
Yeah, you're belting it out.
Yeah, we're
I was
we're
listening to that earlier.
Try you know. So we try. We have our own little twists on some of the music, but mm-hmm. we really like to serve the music. A lot of it the way it was really intended to be served, and take pride in being able to, we try to do that, whether it's country, pop, or mm-hmm. something operatic.
Right, you try to be sort of true to whatever kind of music you're seeing.
It's such a fun challenge.
Yeah. What's, I think, really interesting about this genre is that it's bringing classical music to audiences that would otherwise never listen to it, an opera to, specifically to audiences that would
JC, how many times in one night in a concert do we get somebody who was coming to hear country music and then after they've heard Ness and Dorma somewhere
other person all the time.
I didn't know I liked opera. I'm gonna go see an opera.
Yeah, that's really neat. So you're basically out there, you're kind of getting to people on a level that sort of speaks to them, but sort of drawing them a little bit into this other world.
And then they're like,
I want to see more of that.
Yeah, we do things to make it accessible. Like I tell a story before we do Ness and Dorma uh-huh. about an encounter with Pavarotti. And we project the English translation to Ness and Dorma when we perform it. And, the audiences really appreciate that. And we feel like we're helping bridge a gap and mm-hmm. maybe educate some people in that and forming an appreciation for it.
It's neat. I kind of am.
And it works the other way,
genre.
Too. We like the classical, people, lovers, forming an appreciation for some of the, quote, country music.
Right.
There's some amazing stuff out there on both ends of the spectrum
that
you're going to love if you hear it and you know just mm-hmm. a little bit about it.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I'm liking.
And I'm so glad John could talk about genres because it was actually named after him, John.
But <Genre. laughs>
And the reason we put the lyrics up on Ness and Dorma because most people don't realize Ness and Dorma in Italian means messy dorm room. So
I don't think that's true.
You didn't
true.
Know we're comedians, did you? But he was talking about the three tenors earlier, and I that was my first introduction to opera. Like I was the kind of kid that grew up on a farm that I would not go see Turandot or La Boheme or anything. I would not go see an opera. That was just so foreign to me.
Mm-hmm. He'd go see Kiss or
yeah,
AC/DC.
I would go see 80s rock or George Strait or something like that. But right. when I listened to the three tenor CD. I was so impressed. I'm like, how do these guys sing like that and sing that high with that thick of sound?
Yeah.
Because I've heard, 80s rock singers like Def Leppard or Warren or Metallica, and they're screaming high, but it's totally a different sound. But when you got Pavarotti up on a high C, that's an incredible sound.
Right, like Axl Rose scream, very different from Pavarotti scream.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're both the same note.
But both awesome.
But it both brings, chills to you. But the Pavarotti, in my opinion, that is just the purest form of singing there is.
Well,
that
this,
is pure.
This brings me to kind of what we were going to talk about today, which you guys are going to teach me about today, which is the different kinds of operatic voices. I mean, you're saying tenor, and I'm going, yeah, tenor, I totally know what that is. But actually, I don't at all. I mean, I kind of understand soprano is very high, and, but like, I don't... There are a lot of sort of shades of tenor. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, so tell me all about it. JC, do you want to start, or John, do you?
Well, the tenor for male singers is the, you know, other than a countertenor, but the tenor is, you know, most of the time considered the guy who sings the higher part, like in most people are familiar with soprano, alto, tenor, bass.
Sure.
In a chorus. And so the tenor sings the higher male parts. But in the operatic classical world, there's many different kinds of tenors, as well as baritones, basses, sopranos, mezzo-sopranos. And the Germans came up with a system called the Fach system, and which helped classify voices to fit into the way that different operatic composers wrote. Hmm. And for instance, you hear people talk about a Wagnerian soprano.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a soprano with a really massive instrument that has great carrying power, that can be cut through the orchestra and is a big sound. And so in the tenor world for us, we'll get questions sometimes after a show. So you're a baritone then, except but you were singing a lot of high notes. They get confused because we have one reason our group works is, yeah, we're all tenors, so we all can sing that range, but we have very different voices, very mm-hmm. different colors. And mine is more of a baritonal quality. But in the opera world, I'm not even the biggest, darkest kind of tenor there is. There's, you know, light lyric tenor. There's lyric tenor. There's what they call a lirico spinto tenor, which is the Italians broke it down even further than the Germans. Then there's a spinto tenor. There's a dramatic tenor. So there's all these different classifications.
Well, I'd like to add to his list of tenor voices, because in Italy, one of my tenor roles, I was a character tenor. And the opera was De l'amore le tre melorange, The Love of Three Oranges. And I didn't have a lot of legato singing, which is fluid and held out notes.
Right.
I would like tell the story. I was a narrator. But I was still singing in the tenor range. It was just, I was narrating a story, and I was just really choppy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dup, 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 dup. I would say a lot of that instead of this beautiful legato, like on Boehm or some of these others. But then some of my favorite singers would be, as far as tenors, because it's totally opposite of what I could do, would be like a Heldon tenor or a heroic tenor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is a heroic tenor, which one's the larger voice? I've always wondered
that. The one that wears a cape.
Because I've heard.
The one that wears a cape. I like that. I like that.
Or would it be?
Because I couldn't get a costume. No.
Well, you know, I always tell everybody I'm the romantic tenor.
The romantic tenor.
I can see this.
His wife calls him the romantic tenor.
I don't think that's a real thing.
We call him the comic tenor. Get over there and be quiet.
That's so funny.
We all have our idols or people we've listened to as we've grown up, and we all listened to Pavarotti because he's the epitome of a great tenor. But there's other, you know, like a great example of a dramatic tenor would be probably a lot of people aren't that familiar with his name, but Giuseppe Giacomini. Just unbelievable. I mean, just a freak of nature. This voice is so dark but so massive, and I heard him sing at the Chicago Lyric Opera one time, and I thought this guy is not even human. It's just the darkest, but yet has so much squealo. This voice just cuts through the orchestra.
Is that what that means?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, so much ring in his voice.
Yeah,
but yet it's so dark, and so you think, well, this guy's not a tenor, but yet he sings high C. Like, it's unbelievable. You know, Pavarotti, most people would call a spinto or lirico spinto tenor. You know, Domingo, you get people debating all day long about where he fits in because he sings such a wide range of repertoire, but he's done a lot of even some Wagner operas and, you know, made quite a a name for herself singing Otello over the years, which is a dramatic tenor role. So we do get people asking us, you know, are you really a tenor? And the answer is, I think yes, but because I really can't sing a baritone operatic role. Uh-huh. It's too much. It sits in a place that's not comfortable for me.
Right.
And that's the other thing about a tenor. They're gonna, you know, there's a certain range that you sit in where you're gonna sing in a role that's classified maybe as a spinto tenor role. Maybe we'll pop up to those high notes, but you're not going to live up there like a light lyric tenor, like a Juan Diego Flores, who sings some Rossini and different things. He's going to live up there. And because he can. I can't live up there. I can sing those notes, but I can't live up there all afternoon.
Who is the board of people out there deciding who is a tenor and who is a baritone? Like,
well, you know, there's a lot of listeners that know the tenors, the different tenors, and like if you expand on
hear them,
yeah, you know, like for example, like he just mentioned those two, but then a lot of people like Caruso, mm-hmm. and people are familiar with Mario Delmonico, and Hepner, was he a tenor?
Yeah, Ben
Hepner. He's just retired.
But one of my favorite tenors of all time, besides Pavarotti, was Franco Corelli, who was a great dramatic tenor and probably sets the gold standard for singing Nessun Dorma, which every tenor wants to sing.
Is it that pieces are written for a particular register, and then if you can sing that piece, then it's like, okay, you
that's
are
part of
this
it.
Sort
but,
of...
Yeah, it's part of it, and then part of it is the way that's orchestrated. Like if the orchestration is very heavy and dark, a lot of heavy strings and brass, you know, well, a voice has to be able to cut through that and compete with that. And so, you know, there's a lot of variables involved, but that's certainly one of them.
So both of you have performed in quite a few operas as well as Broadway stuff. Can you talk about the sort of operatic repertoire for repertoire for tenors? What does every tenor sing?
Well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I'm more of a lyric voice, so you know it seems like Mozart fits pretty well with my voice.
Okay.
Like I'm not gonna go sing any Wagner stuff. That would not even be in my thought process.
Right.
And just all the light lyrical stuff, even some of the Rossini stuff or the Britten stuff, I mean, it's the more light and it just flows. And you're talking about what's the difference? Well, if we were standing in this room right now and the guy he was just talking about, Giacomini or Franco Corelli or any of these guys started singing and I sang, you would not hear me at all. But I might be able to sing higher and float above them in my lighter voice. But we would sing a totally different repertoire.
Hmm.
And so I sang La Boheme, but it was more challenging because, like he said, the orchestration is fuller and there's some moments where it's very dramatic. Mm-hmm. When he's crying out for me, and he's up on a, you know, a G or even an A or maybe a B flat, you know, and you have to give it.
Yeah.
You don't have a microphone to try to send the sound out so people can hear it. You have to be able to sing over all these horns and strings. And Yeah, that's always a challenge when it comes to different voice types, if you can come over the orchestra or not.
JC, what's been like your favorite role that you've done?
Well, you know, in the different opera settings, there's always a way to contemporize things. Like, you know, Peter Sellers does something, and we did a Don Pasquale once, and I got to dress up in leather.
Nice.
And everyone looked like they were 50s, and it was all cool. And everyone was just wearing cool stuff, and it was really contemporary.
Yeah.
A version of Pasquale, and that role fit really nice in my voice, and I got to have a lot of fun with it.
Nice.
And that was one of my fondest memories of an opera. I haven't sung as many operas as John, but that was one that was great. And, you know, we talked about the magic flute. I mean, everybody does that one, but I really enjoyed that role a lot. And of course, Puccini, La Boheme, is like probably my favorite opera, and I got to do that in it, both Italian and English.
Nice.
So that was really fun to learn that role and perform it. And those are probably my three top ones right there.
Okay. And John, can you talk about, now many, many operas, most operas are in languages other than one's own.
Mm-hmm.
And
unless you're Italian.
Unless you're Italian, in which case
or German.
You're super lucky. Can you talk about what that's like to sing in a language that maybe you don't, I mean, I'm assuming you probably learn what it's about, but.
Well, you know, when you go to school and study for this, you do take language and diction classes in all the languages, uh-huh. so you at least hopefully learn to pronounce them. But when you don't speak some of them fluently, it's a lot of work to learn, because you got to know what you're singing about.
Yeah.
And that's the only way to really memorize it. and so it is a lot of work, but it's, at the end of the day, it's pretty gratifying.
Yeah.
We're at a disadvantage in this, in the United States. We're not learning other languages at a young age in most places like they do in Europe, you know, where it's just commonplace that, you know, you're learning three plus languages.
Right.
You know, they know their own, and they know English, and they know German, you know, or Italian or French or whatever.
Wasn't it, I can't remember, I think it was like ABBA or somebody like that. There was a Swedish group.
ABBA, yeah,
they were singing in English and didn't actually know what they were saying when they were singing it. I always think of that when I think about opera.
Uh-huh.
Like, does this American dude actually know?
I don't think
he's
I could.
Saying?
I don't think I could memorize it.
I think
I
they
know.
Thought Dancing Queen was Margaret Thatcher having a
yes.
dance party.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know how
right.
that happened.
That was good, man.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'm a comedian. But you know what?
You know, I sing. We're not comedians. Yeah. We just sing.
But you'll be here all week.
Yes, we'll be here all week.
You know, the great thing about there's apprenticeships and things like that. I auditioned for the Puccini Festival in Lucca, Italy.
Mm-hmm.
They took 10 tenors, 10 American, not the 10 tenors group, but 10 American tenors and sopranos and altos and basses. And we got to live in Lucca for the whole summer, 3 months.
Wow.
We got to live with an Italian family. And then you worked on three operas in Italian while you're there, and then you took diction class, and you took voice class, and then the language as well. So that was really fun. I did that 2 summers in a row, and I couldn't believe how quickly my Italian progressed. And then working with the Italian voice coaches were just spot on. I learned so much in the short period of time, and so we have advantages of doing things like that. Like if a kid wants to, really loves opera and really wants to dive in there, you can learn a lot by auditioning for one of these apprentice programs and go over to Italy, or even Germany has the same thing, and you can learn a lot about the lifestyle and singing in that language.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's probably no better way than what he's talking about, too, to immerse yourself in the culture, to really understand the Italian opera, you know, for us as an American to, okay, yeah, I understand the story of La Boheme, but to go live in that culture and maybe get a better feel for the mindset. I mean, what could be better than that?
So what makes tenors better than all of the other voices?
Well, we generally get paid more than ever. No, I'm just kidding. No.
How do you answer that question diplomatically?
No, you know, honestly, you know, there's some theories why people seem to get get more excited about the tenor voice than the other voices in general. I'm saying, you know, because any voice classification, if it's a great singer, you know, you're going to get excited about it. But it just seems to be this thing about tenors. And one of the theories, you know, and I don't know if it's true or not, but is the tenor sings in the top third of his voice more than anybody else. Mm-hmm. So he's singing in a range, especially in operatic literature, that is not a natural place for him to live. Mm-hmm. And so it can be a very exciting sound. It's like walking on a tightrope for us when we're singing, a high passage in one of these arias or something. That anticipation, when you go up there, you know that you're on the edge. You're you're on a tightrope, and all it takes is one misstep, yeah, and you fall off.
Yeah.
And so there's something about the excitement of that that turns people on. And, you know, and Pavarotti would describe those high notes as a controlled yell. And there's something exciting about that. It's a real visceral, exciting sound, and it elicits that reaction from people.
A lot of the conversations that I've done with people, we talk about how important the tension in, mm-hmm, in music is, yeah, to sort of maintain, you know, your interest as a listener. And so that's kind of interesting to hear that, like that tenor, that upper register,
yeah,
you're kind of hearing some of that tension just in the voice.
You know, like tenors, when Pavarotti goes above like an A, he goes into this new sound, and it's just so exciting when he goes up and hits the high B on Nascent Dormer, yeah, or the high C in La Boheme. He goes into a different register. Do baritones, mm-hmm, do the same as well?
There's some that are lower just so register. You know, I mean, Cheryl Milnes, you know, made a name for singing B flats as a baritone, and it's just such an exciting sound. He would go into his upper register, and another great singer, bass, Leonard Warren, was just phenomenal, and it's such an exciting sound when you hear one of the truly great singers, yeah, of their classification do their thing. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Another tenor I admire is Roberto Alagna. He sings such a wide range of repertoire, and it's funny if you get onto some of the blogs online, and you know, people, oh, he shouldn't be singing that, or oh, he sounds great in that, or whatever. But he breaks some of the rules, and I love it. It's like, well, if you can sing it and you can be heard, and it's not killing you. I mean, if you're believable and people are moved by your portrayal of that character, and you can be heard, you know, why not?
So what you're saying basically is that opera nerds are just
now careful.
I've
been an opera nerd. I've got way too many recordings.
But they're just like Trekkies,
yes,
in that they debate
it's
points
awesome.
Of, you know, like...
Yeah. You just get on and look at a few opera blogs and you won't believe it. Oh, it's, yeah, just like Trekkies, you're right.
New discoveries.
And I used to be a real audiophile, and I'd have all these obscure tenor recordings of people you never heard of, and some that were just phenomenal. And you're wondering, why didn't this person become a household name? And, you know, and I don't know why some of them didn't. But then you get on a blog and you start talking with people, and you meet somebody just as nerdy as you who knows who that is. It's awesome.
Well, and as a tenor in college, you know, you're always constantly talking with the other tenors, and you're, oh, you know, we could play a recording of 10 different tenors right now singing Nascent Dormer, and it would almost sound like a different aria.
Huh. Well, I think because, you know, back to the beginning of the conversation, talking about classical crossover, mm-hmm, you know, in the last 15, 20 years, you hear a lot more people singing something like Nessun Dorma. I mean, you can find Aretha Franklin singing Nessun Dorma, you
really?
Know. Yeah. People, this idea that you can't sing it unless you're the specific voice type has been thrown out the window. It's a piece of music that moves people, and so people take it, pick it up, put their own twist on it, and put it out there. Much, yeah, to the chagrin of some of the purists, but it's, you know, why not?
So it's sort of opened up.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not quite as restrictive.
I, you know, there are things that happen. I remember there was a time when I was really so zeroed in on just the operatic world that, you know, some of the things that were happening, kind of like, really? You know, but then I've moved on to another place, and I think, well, why not? You know, it's interesting to see the whole evolutionary process of some of these things.
Yeah, the sort of boundaries between the worlds are sort of coming down, and it seems like this classical crossover genre is a product of that sort of evolution,
yeah,
that seems to be happening.
And I'm sure earlier, you know, centuries earlier, people were like, oh, I can't believe they're doing that, or that, you know. You know, it's heresy. It's always evolving. Yeah.
And symphonies be
Wagner did what?
Yeah. It seems like symphonies are much more accepting of the with the pops concerts and the crossover now than they were.
But it's interesting when we go around all these different symphonies that we perform with, some of them that have been doing popular concerts, pops concert series for years are you can tell which ones that's commonplace and which ones are trying to accept that idea. It varies, you know.
What? You're going to have a video during Nessun Dorma? You're going to put the lyrics up behind us? Impossible. Crazy. You mean you're going to sing the Vincero again? You know, it's pretty interesting, but it seems like when we were able to do that, it comes off really, really pretty
nice. At the end of the day, everybody's happy and surprised, and, you know, the ones that we're not sure about, you know, what? Moving lights? It's like, no, really, it's going to be great. You're going to love it.
Yeah.
Okay, and by the end of it, oh, wow, this was really a great concert, fun concert, great charts, great mixture of music. So,
yeah, it's hard to get the Trekkies out there to kind of get down with the idea that like having fun,
that's right, live and long enjoying, and prosper.
Perfect. That was, yeah.
That's right.
Bravo.
I can even do the
too.
Hand. Yeah.
You and me.
I think Star Trek was my babysitter.
That's what happened.
Yes.
Well, you guys, I really appreciate you taking the time to come onto the Classical Classroom and to teach me about tenors, which I now know 100% more than I did.
Well, it was all a lie. We don't know anything, but we made up as much as we could.
You did a great job. I was super convinced. I really appreciate it. And you guys, your second album came out in December of last year. It's called You Should Dream. And you guys are an indie band. I mean, you're doing all of this on your own. So, people, you should go out there and support these guys. Your PBS special is going to be airing on our station, KUHT, on June 9th. And you'll be having a concert at Cullen Theater here in Houston on September 11th. So that's the Texas Tenors. Go check them out, you guys. Thanks so much, JC and John. I mean, I just did that the opposite way, but I knew what I meant.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Thanks. All right, everybody. That's about it for this episode of Classical Classroom. For more Classical Classroom, go to houstonpublicmedia.org/classroom. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes, or you can follow us on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/classicalclassroom. If you listen on iTunes, make sure to review us. And if you're on SoundCloud, make sure to follow us. That would be awesome. Thanks to our audio producer, Todd Tall Tenor Holslander, for twiddling knobs. To our program director, St. John Flynn, for his always wise spiritual guidance. To me for saying words, and to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.